Can you tell me if like this is like a weird dietary choice?
Okay.
So
you've come to the exact right people.
Yeah, I think our diets are extremely normal human diets.
Yeah, that's why I asked. So, you know, with the move, I haven't had a lot of time to cook, and I'm still, like, learning how to use our kitchen and all that stuff, because, you know, every kitchen is California so kitchen. Different.
Yeah, because right. It only makes pizza.
No matter what, you try to scramble eggs in there, pizza comes out.
Sure.
Right. So, I had to kind of go off of whatever was in the pantry, and I've returned to a dish that I, like, lived on during college. And my wife thinks it is a gross dish. I think it is a perfectly normal dish.
I wish our show was just about this. Honestly, yeah, this is my favorite conversation to have.
So what I do is I take, a pita, or ideally just, like, a flour tortilla.
Oh, I like this start.
All right. I warm it up in the microwave for 10 seconds. Oh, yeah,
a little elegant. That's just for you.
Then I open a packet of tuna, one of those little plastic packets of tuna. Lemon pepper is my favorite. I spread it out inside of the tortilla. I drop one whole pickle in the tortilla. What?
You are getting into Garfield territory.
I slice the pickle on the plate, which usually damages the plate.
Yeah.
But now it's like much, much more crunchable, right?
Yeah.
And then a little bit of salt and pepper. And if I'm feeling like I'm treating myself, a little bit of olive oil.
Now you're cooking, baby. Well, you got artisanal with those last two steps.
Yeah. And then I fold it up. Yeah. I wrap it on one end. On the other end, I keep it open. And that way I can pour out the tuna juice.
Oh.
You have
into
to
a shot glass.
You must decant the tuna juice.
And there's a little bit of the pickle juice. And then it's like nice and dry. And I just crunch through it. And that's like a lunch. Yeah.
Why even bother cutting the pickle? Why don't you just jam the whole pickle in there and wrap it like a little baby?
That's a good question.
He's not a fucking caveman.
Exactly. I'm not a fucking caveman.
Also, he's gonzo. this is a gonzo food he's eating.
To give you the real answer, if you don't chop the pickle, then when you bite into the pickle, you might not get through. So then you end up just like pulling the whole pickle out like a T-Rex.
Might not get through. You can't bite through a pickle, Chris Plant. Dinosaur.
No, it's hard. I have delicate teeth.
Soft pickle teeth. Nature is trying to keep Chris Plant from eating pickles. All right. Well.
So wait. So this isn't gone how I thought it would.
Okay.
So can we have a vote?
No. You can have a fucking public flogging. Is what you can have.
Yeah, there won't be much
Oscar
shame.
The Grouch eating motherfucker. No, you are so precipitously close to becoming the Russ. Apologies, Russ. You're so close to being the Russ on this podcast. You're like razor's edge with this little.
Because fatherhood has tamed the Russ in a way that I think is you are too. You may be too far gone.
Well, it's you. You have Russ by becoming a father. Russ is now just has like. Dad quirk, like you know, like it's not weird Russ quirks. It's Russ's son's dad, the weird things that he does.
But Chris Plant has a son too.
What? No, I know, but you didn't know how to keep yourself alive, Russ.
Yeah, that's true.
But now you have to keep someone else alive, and it's rubbed off on you, Chris. This is the best he gets.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
He can't eat a pickle, guys.
The ceiling is higher on Russ. Chris is at the ceiling.
So is it bad?
A pickle for days.
I'm not saying I've done this, but is it bad if I served this to my child?
End it.
Okay, that's actually the worsties. Now it's the worsties. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know a bunch of great games coming to your systems this fall.
Plug in.
My name is Russ Farshick, and I know the best game of the week.
That's right, all four of the besties are back to talk with you about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. This is It's a video game club. And just by listening, you, my friend, are a member. We've got so much great stuff to talk to you about this week. I'm thrilled to be here. We are going to talk about the fall lineup. What how's this fall looking, Plant? How generally speaking, before we get the nitty gritty, how are we feeling?
You're not going to be ready for this, but they've got video games coming this fall. They've got Call of Duty.
No,
they've
spoilers.
They've got Madden.
You're spoiling it. Well, that's not. I mean, that's pretty much.
They got other stuff, but we're going to get to it in the episode.
And some games that aren't legally required to be released annually. come up after this. We're also going to have a discussion of the Forgotten City, a sort of indie gem that many of us here on this podcast have been enjoying quite a bit. So we'll get into all that right after this.
You know, at the beginning, Chris Plant mentioned Madden. Does that come out this fall and I just missed it, or is it out already?
Yeah, it's usually out by August.
Who can?
Okay, so possibly. I missed it and no one cares. It's fine.
So this has been a weird time for video game releases. It's been a weird time for everything, but especially a weird time for video game releases because we're sort of at like, if you had started developing your game when the pandemic began, I feel like you would be like rounding the bend for a lot of games, for a lot of the average like dev cycle, you'd be like rounding the bend at this point. And I think nobody really knew how it was going to impact the release schedule, but we got a decent little batch coming up for the rest
of
the year.
It's looking good. It's also weird because like the install base hasn't necessarily thrived for the current gen consoles because of there's chips that aren't making enough chips, I guess.
But it doesn't really matter because every single one of the games on this list is coming to past generations as well.
That's a fair point, yeah.
So it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I also feel like a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about probably would have come out last year. But last year was last year.
Yeah.
Right?
It's also worth noting, they've sold 10 million PS5s.
I guess that ain't.
5 million Series X's as of June 30th. So, like, there's a few out there.
Yeah, we're gonna start the list with, like, maybe the best game? Like, most promising game on the list.
And most out next week game.
Oh, my gosh, I can't believe that. I'm so excited.
I know, dog.
So, we're talking about Deathloop. Or as I like to call it, Dishonored 3, now with guns and spies.
Have you played? Has anyone actually played it at an event or no?
And if we could, we couldn't.
We couldn't talk about it. Yeah, fair. I forgot how things. I was gone for one week, and I forgot how things work.
Jeff Bacalar talked about it on Bombcast.
Oh yeah,
there's been a preview round for it, but
okay.
I've not played it. Everyone seems to be very in favor of it, and I actually just recently started playing for the first time Dishonored Death of the Outsider, which I never played, and it totally got
that's
me
great.
In the mood for...
Is that standalone? Could I
that
go
is
hop
a standalone.
In?
Yes.
It's on Game Pass.
Deathloop, if you're not familiar, it's from Arkane, so it's got a lot of that Dishonored DNA, but you are also in a titular Deathloop, and you have to figure out how to sort of string together a series of what? Hits? Of assassinations?
Yeah, you're using each of your loops to gain more information such that you can assassinate a bunch of different folks on this island without problem. And so you obviously keep some upgrades across your loops, but also the information you glean, like, oh, I know this guy goes to this corner at 2 p.m. every day. I'm going to sit up on this sniper tower and take him out. So you're kind of like, coincide a bunch of different things. That's my understanding of it. I have not played it.
Yeah.
I've heard people describe it. It sounds buck wild and it looks like visually super stunning. The one thing that always was a little bit of a drag for Dishonored is that even though it's a gorgeous game, it's very dour, just like environmentally speaking.
Yeah.
This seems the total opposite of that. Very colorful and all over the place. I'm super, super psyched. We do have a lot of
Dishonored
to go over,
though. Dishonored's too slow. Just too slow.
Okay. Well,
and this game looks real fast.
Are we in a weird, like, renaissance for Groundhog Day games? Because I feel like with... We talked about Overboard. We talked about 12 Minutes. Well, we got Deathloop. I feel like there was another big one.
I mean, there is. It's Forgotten City, but you haven't played it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. that's wild. Okay, yes, this game looks very good. Man, this... Damn. Hey, guys, fall looks... I'm looking at this list. Fall looks good.
Let's keep on trucking this.
Yeah. September 16th, is that right? I think that's a Sunday.
I mean, maybe I got it wrong. I was writing out the rundown. I'm pretty sure that's
September 16th is what internet
is
says.
An indie okay. game. So they could pretty much put those out whenever they want.
No,
they could do a
I'm wrong.
If they wanted to.
That is Thursday. It's that's when Eastward comes out. This is a indie. Oh man. Adventure RPG, sort of puzzly thing.
It kind of looks like Earthbound, if I had to.
It looks a lot like Earthbound.
If I had to put a finger on it. It's published by Chucklefish. I forget the name of the developer. I apologize. But people are very, very amped about it, just, I think, based on trailers.
Pixpool.
Pixpool.
Yeah. It looks so good. They featured it heavily in the last Nintendo Indie World showcase. And... yeah, it just looks gorgeous. It's like some of the best looking pixel art I've seen in absolutely forever. And it's sort of got Zelda vibes. There's river rafting segments, and it just looks hip as hell. I don't know.
It looks like Minish Cap quality pixel art.
Yes,
like that it has it's really that level of quality that, like, I mean, I think we said that in the Zelda episode. You know, we haven't seen a lot ripping that off, despite it being awesome.
Yeah. I think that's timed exclusive for Switch. So I think it's coming out on PC maybe same day, yeah. But that's September 16th. Man.
Okay, here's the tricky one. September 23rd, Diablo 2 Resurrected. Griffin, you were probably excited about this at some point a long time ago.
Yeah, it's like, hard to be stoked about any Blizzard product at the moment. Yeah.
So what I would say for people who are listening to the show, because I know people have a variety of feelings about this, is do what you feel is right. That can mean that you don't want to buy the game because you don't want to support Activision Blizzard, and that's totally fine. I will also say that there are plenty of people who worked on this game or work at Activision Blizzard who are not the bosses, who want you to play the things that they make. And who do not want you to support a full ban on buying their games. So it's tricky. Like, we are not going to say one way or the other which is the right thing for you to do. But if you're still hyped for this, I understand. And I understand it's complicated. And if you completely find this unbearable, completely understand that too. So I think we can kind of leave it at that for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to just say one other thing, and that's, like, thank God for Blockbuster, because that lets you wander in, play the games, all the games,
yeah.
Any games you want, but especially this one where you don't have to support the company necessarily, but you do get to enjoy the hard work from the talented artists.
That's so true.
Thank you, Blockbuster.
Thank you, Blockbuster.
But when you do use the Virtual Boy kiosk, it does smell like Cheeto breath.
Well, Cheeto eyes, which is a whole different thing. Okay. Well, I can't look at the list anymore because my freaking trackpad stopped working. So
good news, because there will be a mouse ball coming your way in the form of a monkey ball.
Finally, a game with... This is the ad. Finally, a game with balls.
Oh, yeah. Who is that? Donkey?
That's like, cool. You sound like Donkey, but also you sounded like every video game advertisement for, like, the Nintendo 64 era.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Super Monkey...
Especially for the game balls.
Yeah.
Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania is coming October 5th. This is... we've talked about it on the show before. This is games 1 through 3 in the Super Monkey Ball canon. It also has a number of guest stars... from various...
Anyone has ever said the Super Monkey Ball canon before?
I think there is a canon minigame in the Super Monkey Ball.
who's in there? They've got...
Fucking Kiryu from Yakuza.
Hello Kitty.
Hello Kitty is DLC, yes.
They just announced someone else.
Oh, the monster...
Monster Rancher monster guy, yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that sounds pretty dope. That's coming October 5th. Another October 5th game is Jet Far Shore. Plant, you're very excited about this game.
Yes, I'm extremely excited about this. This is the follow-up by effectively the co-creator, I guess, like, central creative force of Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery. And he partnered with a new studio. Originally, he worked with Capybara Games for Sword and Sorcery. This one's new. And basically, the long short of it is it's like No Man's Sky-esque, in that you are zipping from planet to planet, exploring these, like, large, I think largely barren spaces. It's been quite secretive. I mean, I know he's been working on it for a very, very, very long time. And I'm really excited to play it. I have a feeling it will be divisive just because it looks slow. Like, it looks like slow game.
It's so hard to tell, right? Because I've watched a few trailers for this game and still feel like I don't know what it is, except that it looks like No Man's Sky, which was bad when it came out and then took lots and lots of work to become a good game. So, it's a weird thing. It could be great, it could be not, but I don't. It's tough to guess because we don't know what the game is. Is there lasers? Who knows?
I'll tell you what we probably have a much better idea about. Far Cry 6. You close your eyes, you can probably see what this one's going to be like. Obviously, the last Far Cry was met with, a fair amount of disappointment. Is that?
You're not talking about the zombie one. You're talking about the America one.
The America one.
Yeah. Yes, the America one.
Yes. Was this the zombie one?
It came after the America one.
You're kidding me.
No.
But it was like a side story to the America.
Yeah, it was like apocalypse.
Oh, okay. Regardless, fucking Far Cry 5 was a bad game. And maybe
it was a bad game. It's very, and I think that this franchise, you know, it still has some, I still am interested in it. I don't know.
Far Cry 4 was a good game. So yeah, it's weird because they did a good one and then they did a bad one. So who knows? It could be anything.
But, you know, if we're going with the rhythm there, Far Cry 1, bad. Far Cry 2, pretty boring. Far Cry 3 and 4, good.
Excellent.
Far Cry 5, bad. Far Cry 6, I don't know.
What
I'm not
is
good
this
with
rhythm?
Patterns, but
it's very syncopated.
I think it's anybody's guess is what I'm saying. You know, it's anybody's guess.
It's the Fibonacci sequence. They're going to have, they did one good, one bad. Two bad, one too bad. Two good. So they're back to two bad. That's the Fibonacci
one bad,
sequence.
One boring. Oh,
classic Fib.
The classic Fibby.
October 8th is a game that I'm just going to say the name of, and we should just move on because I'm too pumped for it, and I don't want to talk about it any more than that. Metroid Dread.
I'm dreading it.
October 8th. Fucking
that's
awesome.
That's a good one.
Can't wait.
That's also when the OLED Switch
also the
drops.
OLED Switch is coming out then.
I can't wait for that.
We're going to talk about that game so much. You're right. We can talk about that later.
There's really
be
no
like
reason to go beyond that.
Five episodes for you.
October 12th is Back for Blood. This is the game that was made by the team members behind Left 4 Dead. It also has a 4 in the title.
Is it Turtle Rock or did they make a new thing? It's Turtle Rock. Yeah.
I know they had a beta, and the response of the beta was like a little bit lukewarm, but maybe that was just an early thing. But I know people really enjoy like co-op story-based PvE experiences, and that's certainly this. So
yeah.
I think definitely one to watch for, but we'll see if it can kind of rally off of the beta response.
I think this is Warner Brothers publishing, I think, but I hope whoever is publishing it gives it the kind of Ubisoft Rainbow Six Siege treatment, because I think a game like this, you kind of need like a year or two in public where you can make it the thing that people are hoping for, I guess. Or find a way to split the difference between the creative ambition and the audience ambition.
I guess so, but like Left 4 Dead 1 and 2 came out and were great. Like everyone loved them.
They were also
I know it was
an
earlier
Valve.
Time, but...
This game, I was recently looking up... about it because I was curious. I wanted to know if it had the multiplayer competitive mode where like one team was the zombies and one team, and it does have that, which is very exciting. But it also has like you can make decks for your like different characters, and there's a shit ton of characters this time.
Yeah,
I think there's like 8 different characters, and each one has like their own sort of like specialties. And then you create like sort of loadout decks that inform like what you find and what your character can do, but also like affects the game director, just like the AI. It's very, very, very ambitious, and I think if they nail it, like this is going to be a game that people are going to be talking about for a long, long, long time.
Should be interesting. October 22nd is Battlefield 2042. Did I get the title right?
You did. That's the correct number.
Okay.
Is it weird that I'm like pretty excited about this?
It looks interesting. I think the most interesting thing, I forget what they call it in the game, but they have this like level creator thing where you could like throw Vietnam helicopters at futuristic hover tanks and like do these crazy matchups. And that was like the first time in a while that I've kind of cared about a Battlefield thing.
Yeah.
So that seems pretty cool.
Yeah. I always enjoy Battlefield games for... I always enjoy my weekly... My annual Battlefield dive for like a week. I have lots of friends who are very into this franchise, and I'm always like, hell yeah, let's saddle up. And then I play it and realize...
Like the skill curve.
I'm so bad at it. Yeah.
It's so hard to play online. I just get creamed.
Yeah. But we're old men.
You could say we are living in the age of empires for... coming out October 28th.
Anyone else want to say some cool shit about that? Like funny
shit? Yeah, boy, these empires, they just don't stop, and we're still very much in their age.
I feel bad for our listeners who want us to talk more about like strategy games because
boring game.
We're going to give this a fair shot because I do think this game looks good.
Yeah. No, we are not such big jags that we say this genre we don't like. Every game in it is terrible.
No,
it's just
you know you know what it is. There's like you discover weak points, and even with four true professionals of gaming, you're gonna find points where it's like, we actually have a place here where we.
Yeah.
You know.
I think we can all agree this is the only genre that we don't talk about other than fighting games and racing games. And
sports
games. Racing games.
Oh, no, we talk about they like
sports. That was a good segue. Hey, good segue. To
racing games. Game of the year. Riders Republic comes out October 28th. And it is number one Gotti contender right now.
I want to talk about this game in the context of Chris Plant. Now, you might know that Chris Plant recommends a lot of sports games and a lot of racing games, and I try to try them, and I try to have a good time, and they generally are not super fun. That's just a preference. I just don't dig a lot of racing games.
Needle the razor's edge here. Where's this gonna go?
This is gonna go to, I played the beta off of Chris Plant's recommendation of Riders Republic, and absolutely, totally loved it. It was really, really excellent. It is exactly what I'm looking for. A vibe of like SSX meets, I don't know, a game that has other vehicles that aren't just a snowboard. There's a motorcycle. You get a jetpack at one point. You get like flight gear. You can just like walk around the world if you want to and like visit sites. It's fucking sick. Also, I thought it was really great.
You can change the type of sport you're doing on the fly. So one of our listeners recommended that I get in the jetpack, right, and go over this like huge bridge in what's effectively the Grand Canyon, and then get inches from the ground, and then right when I'm just like an inch above the ground, switch to a road bicycle and literally just like blast through the terrain at, you know, 200 miles per hour on a road bicycle, and then of course crash into a ragdoll fury.
Right.
It is so fun. The other thing that is great, and I am in favor of just ripping things off as long as you're doing it in your own additional creative way, is they borrow from the Fall Guys idea of, what if we just put like 50, I think, people on the PC version, I think it's 50, in a race. So doing a SSX-style race where the screen is just swarmed in other people is hilarious. Is it like fair or competitive? No. Not at all. But it doesn't need to be because the rest of the game has that for you. This game, I really hope that this game takes off. It is everything I loved about Steep, but polished and enjoyable for people who don't have extreme patience for Steep. The only thing that is a caveat, I'll let everybody know right up top, the dialogue is painfully out of touch. They make a joke very early on where they're like, yeah, it's brand spanking new. And like,
that's all, no, what are you talking about? That's good. That's amazing.
Sounds pretty good.
That anyway, sounds good to me.
I cannot wait for y'all to play this game and for you to realize that actually I do have good taste in video games.
This is the one that's going to push us over the edge. Let's move through some of these a bit faster, because we've been going a long time. Mario Party Superstars is going to be...
More?
This Mario Party game, but it's got, like, I think 100 or so, like, minigames from past. It's your favorite minigames from past Mario Party games and your favorite boards from past Mario Party. Well, maybe this one will do it.
Call of Duty Vanguard on November 5th. is from the studio that brought you Call of Duty World War II and Advanced Warfare.
Can you even say that? Like, it's from every Call of Duty studio.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
Every Call of Duty studio works on every Call of Duty game now.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Sure. I saw a trailer. I don't know necessarily what they're doing with it, but I think people really like Warzone, so I'm sure that will propel the new one into... being popular as well.
I don't want to sound dismissive. It's just this franchise has reached a point where, like, it comes out and then I wait, and if people talk about it and like, yeah, it's great, then it's like, okay, well, go ahead and get on it. But it's they've been doing it so long now, I've become sort of inured to having any kind of like anticipation for it. But we'll see.
It's been a little while since I got dipped into one of those.
Y'all, November 9th, Forza Horizon 5. I can keep this short. Everything I said about Riders Republic, just apply it here.
Do it again. One more again. Shin Megami Tensei 5.
Is that Persona 5?
No, it's Shin Megami Tensei 5. It's a lot of the... If you've never played one, it's sort of the mechanical foundational elements of Persona, but in like a super weird future demonic like JRPG open world setting. I've always wanted to break into this series and... Haven't done it yet, but maybe the fifth entry into this story franchise will be the one that gets me there. It's coming out on Switch, too, which is great.
Pokemon Diamond and Pearl Remake, Griff, is that something?
Yeah, I mean, those are great games that haven't really gotten the remake treatment before, unlike most other entries in the Pokemon series. It's got, like, this sort of, Funko Pop chibi aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like a chibi look to it. I like the
art
style.
But only in the overworld, and then once you get into the battles, like, it just looks like Sword and Shield.
Oh yeah.
So not my favorite aesthetic, but I have been playing the past couple Pokemon games with my kiddo, and I'm sure that this will very much appeal to him. So
the Griffin McElroy trilogy concludes, I would say, with Final Fantasy 14 Endwalker.
Is this the last expansion pack they're doing? That's why it's called Endwalker.
I mean, jokes aside, I mean, do you want to get into this? This is the end of the current...
I'm giving you 30 seconds to talk about it.
Endwalker is the end of the current story arc, basically, that has been going since A Realm Reborn launched in, like, 2014, I think. So, yes, it's going to wrap up something, and I'm all caught up in all of the, like, updates that they've done in, like, anticipation of this, which is to say, like, a ton of story shit has been hot as hell.
You're probably up to 10 or 11 hours of gameplay.
10 or 13 or 14, somewhere around there. I think probably 14 or 15 hours.
A lot.
Yeah.
They should measure it by your children's smiles.
Like how many of those you've missed out.
How many of your children's laughs that you've missed.
Yeah. They should do that for all video games, huh?
Amen.
Yeah, but most of them don't take up so many children's smiles, you know?
Well, I mean, cumulatively speaking, I mean, this thing that we do, play video games, I mean, anytime you're looking at a screen, you're not looking at a child's smile.
Yeah, but, like, you're usually not riding a chocobo, you know?
Sometimes you are. Sometimes you are. There's a lot of games, actually, where you ride chocobos, so.
Advanced Wars Mythology, too complex. Start over.
Yes.
Advance Wars Reboot.
Now be careful, because when you're playing this one, you're not going to be seeing any children's smiles, and that includes your own children's smiles.
There might be a way to do like a picture-in-picture, you think?
Maybe, yeah. It's, you know, we all love this series from Intelligent Systems. It was foundational, built the backbone, I think, for, there's a lot of Fire Emblem DNA here, and, people have a lot of fondness in their hearts, but there's no kids smiling in this one, so.
And that will be the last major game released this year, mark my words.
And that's Halo Infinite comes out after that on December
8th. No, I say, I don't think, I want to lay even money that that one gets, Master Chief gets that little nudge into his old friend 2022.
Yeah, oh, there's no fun. Way.
No, that, it's coming out this year.
Here's my theory. If
he already pushed half of it. No. I mean, what do you need for it to count as the actual release? Like, if it boots up and you see him like, I need a gun, credits, coming 2022.
The free-to-play multiplayer will come out this year. That'll happen, right?
Yes. Like, I mean, they already did the beta, so they could just re-release the beta and have that count
already. All right. So that's the games of the fall and winter. Yeah, there is.
Halo Infinite. I'm ready to play a Halo game. I didn't play the last one. I feel like I should. Well, I kind of missed some of the fight in the middle, but maybe I'll come back.
Not a little bit of finish fight. I don't care about the middle part. Just finish it.
I feel like I don't. The way that I will tell what's going on is just like, where's Cortana? Is Cortana inside of a big robot
body? She was
evil
last we left Cortana.
She was evil, but then was she not evil for a minute? I think but she was nice evil. Was she evil like Vin Diesel was evil in Fast 8, where it was like for the family
undercover?
Still? Yeah, right.
Did they give her clothes? Spoiled.
Cyber clothes.
Yeah, she's a robot. Spoiled, she doesn't need clothes.
We just spoiled the last Halo game and Fate of the Furious. Shame on us.
We're going to take a quick break and we're talking about a little bit of a conversation about a beautiful little gem we've been enjoying. And I hope you'll join us then. Now, Griff, you have not gotten into the Forgotten City, so I'm gonna try to sell you on it. How's that?
Okay. Yes, please. Okay. Yes.
Originally built on a Skyrim mod many years ago, and now is its own standalone release.
Can you play as like Sonic the Hedgehog? And
not in this.
And you have lightsabers and a gun, and you can do Matrix jumps.
I want to try to keep this brief.
Okay.
So, and if I skip parts of the story, it's like, why didn't you explain? It's because I don't want to like spoil anything. But you fall through a portal that takes you through space and time into a ancient sort of Roman city where. People are living in peace and harmony, and it would almost be idyllic except for the fact that there's this thing called the Golden Rule, where if anybody in this village, and it's not massive, we're talking like around 20 people live here, there is this rule that is if you commit a sin, then everyone in the place will die. And that's the only like sort of thing that's stitching the society together. There's a leader of the society who has suspects that there is going to be a sin committed that day and charges you, the outsider, with finding out who's going to commit that sin. And the sort of gameplay-wise, the hook is that when you or someone else commits a sin, everyone does die, but you also have a small window which you're able to escape and go back to the beginning of your time there, go back to the beginning of the loop. But all the information that you've learned and all of the items you've collected stay with you. So you are building relationships with people, but it's all begun back at the beginning with each loop that you do. There's a little combat, there's a little bit of platforming, if you like, there's a lot of exploration, that's probably the thrust of it, and a lot of, like, narrative, you know, pulling at threads, trying to figure out how to trigger different things in this clockwork world to try to solve the mystery, and in doing so, if you solve the mystery, it creates a paradox, so you never would have been pulled there. And it'll kick you back to your own time. That's the theory, at least, that you're operating under. And that is the Forgotten City.
Two things up top. One, talking about this game requires spoilers. We're not going to talk about spoilers right now. What we're going to do is we're going to talk more about this game. We're going to do the rest of the show, the questions, what we're doing next week. And then right before the very end of the show, we'll have a quick spoilery conversation there. So if you want to hear about the endings and stuff and you've played the game, it'll be there, but for everybody else, you don't need to worry about it. We're not going to, like, spoiler things. The other thing that I'll say about this game is it has multiple endings anyway, so kind of hard to spoil in certain ways. And Griffin, I'm sure that you heard that description from your brother, and you thought, sounds interesting, but also sounds repetitive if you have to keep repeating the same day over and over again. No, They have a very wise fix, which is a man by the name of Galerius who just believes whatever he is told. And he happens to be waiting right outside your portal every time you restart the day. And you run up to him and he's like, oh, hey, who are you, stranger? And you're like, shut up, Galerius. I need you to go do this, this, and this for me so I don't have to. And he's like, I mean, I don't have anything else to do. Sure, why not? So whatever you had accomplished in previous loops, you can largely just have him handle for you. So
big
that you don't
stuff.
Have to
worry. I mean, big,
very big
but,
stuff.
Yeah, big stuff.
There's still some repetition, without a doubt, but it dodges like endless repetition by having this solve.
Does it define the sins? Are we talking about like the seven, deadlies?
Oh, bud. You are – okay, so Griffin, without getting the spoiler – that is the question that this game asks.
Okay.
What
is the sin? And that is what this game is it is basically, so imagine that question you just ask and you have 20 people living in a village who all have their own answer to that question. All
right.
And no one can test it, right? It's all theoretical because
if you test it, you could kill everybody in the whole city.
Exactly, right? So it's very much like, what do you think constitutes a sin, you know, grave enough to kill
Justin,
everybody?
Justin, I wanted to ask you, do you consider this a detective game? Because that was the vibe that I got from it, but I'm curious what your take is as a lover of detective games.
I don't think it's a detective game in the sense that, like, you know, you're not necessarily finding a clue that unearths the mystery. I mean, that's definitely part of it. I think this is like a very cleverly masked, like, philosophical exercise.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I think in terms of the actual themes covered, I agree with you totally.
I think an exploration game is a better way of more than detective, because you're not having to – you know what the difference is for me? You're not doing a lot of deduction.
Sure.
If you find the thing, it's like, well, this is what this person needs to
– In fact, you don't –
There's also some fun, like, hacky stuff. Like, there's a lot of different solutions for different problems. For example, there's like, you can start off as a character who has a gun. And so it's like, you just shoot somebody. And then it's like, well, okay, I've only got 10 bullets forever. So like, you can't use it on repeated loops, but you do have a gun. And there's stuff like you can rob somebody and then make a run for the gate. And then you just have that money. So you can use that money in other places. So like, there's like some little, like, sort of goofy, hacky stuff you can do with that.
I don't think I am the norm here, and I know that Fresh thinks I just happen to have had bad luck. I really enjoyed this game. The final 10%, I ran into a series of infuriating bugs that threatened to break the entire game. It was the worst possible time to do it. Here's a tip. If this happens to you, you do, at a certain point, gain a weapon, and you can kill anybody in the game. So if you are having bugs because you need to access something that they possess and it's not letting you, you kill them, you take what you need from them, and you just restart the loop. And what I did not realize is, in theory, you could do this from the beginning of the game. You could just straight up murder everybody, take all their stuff, and be like, well, I've got most of what I need.
I did want to call out the overall structure of the game is also really cool, insofar as it would be a very overwhelming thing to get introduced to 20 different people and try to like keep track of everything. And the game does a very good job. I guess you could compare this a little bit to Oberdin in the sense that there is like a menu that keeps track of a bunch of different quote leads that are like mini stories that are going on within the city. And each of those leads has their own steps to them. So you can just say, okay, I'm just going to focus on, hey, here's this woman who's been poisoned. I'm just going to focus on, how do I fix this problem? How do I find a cure for her poisoning? And that way it's not like, oh man, I have like 16 different plates I'm spinning. Now, eventually, all of these different leads will coincide with one another and be very important to you, like sort of unraveling the mystery. But I think as a way to introduce people to this world, it's a very smart, engaging, just like accessible way to experience the concept itself.
Yeah, and this is where I'm a little more mixed on it than Fresh is. I'm curious where you are, Justin, on it. For me, this game just feels like a visual novel in that way. As in, it tells you how to finish it. You know, you can do other options and like find alternate ways to kind of break the story early, but it kind of plays itself if you're just looking at the menu, which I like. But because
I very much don't agree with that. Let me finish really quick.
Sorry. Okay. But the visual novel point of that for me is I felt like I was going through the story that they had carefully laid out for me and I really enjoyed. But because it was in a big 3D world, I was just having to run through it to get to the plot points. And while I liked looking at that world for the first couple hours, by the end it was like, oh my gosh, please just let me skip to the story beat so I can just progress this along.
I guess my experience was exactly like that. I use the zip lines a lot. I had like one really long run.
Yeah.
That wasn't like repetitive. It's sort of like the run where you get a weapon, like a lot of, it takes a long time to get to that, a long time to get through it. And I just kind of like kept going with that particular like run. So I wasn't restarting a lot. Towards the middle of it. I didn't find myself restarting that often to where I was like getting bored navigating. There's also an element of like, where is this person going to be at this given moment that you have to contend with.
My experience was that I would only use the menus when I felt a little bit stuck, like I didn't know where to go. But broadly speaking, if I had like a vague understanding, so for example, there's a guy in town who's gay and someone is like threatening him for being gay because that person believes that being gay is a sin and it's going to cause everyone to die. And, you know, one of the tool tips they gave was like, hey, you should just talk to people and see if anyone saw anything of like who created this graffiti on his store threatening him. And I like started talking to people, but didn't really find anything. And then just started like looking through rooms and found like a letter that was relevant to exactly what I was trying to do. And so I felt like, you know, to Justin's point about multiple ways at it, I didn't think that there was always this one precise, this is the only way to do it. There are a couple quests that are kind of linear, but broadly speaking, I thought a lot of the stories had these like very clever, interesting ways to like solve the problem. To the point where, like, once I beat it, and again, I won't talk about spoilers, but once I beat it, I was able to go restart the game, and I was able to beat the entire thing again in, like, two loops, like, incredibly quickly, just because there was so much information that, like, just I knew from the previous playthrough. So it was just, like, I think it's extremely clever. I think it's very well written, for what it's worth. Like, the voice acting's very strong. There just aren't a lot of narrative-first games that do it as well as this game. There are more time, you know, over time, but maybe we get 5 or 6 in a year, if that. And I think this is one of the best personally. I know Plant feels maybe a little bit differently, but I thought, you know, for the 5 or 6 hours that this takes to beat, it's a very cogent, interesting story. I was always engaged with all the little characters, and I thought it was an amazing experience. I highly, highly recommend it.
Is it like Outer? It sounds a lot like Outer Wilds.
Yeah, that's the other comparison that I thought. I thought like Oberdin, it reminded me of, and also Outer Wilds.
Okay,
much more condensed. Yeah. Not nearly as mechanical.
Yeah, not as hard as Outer Wilds is.
Not as ambitious either.
Yeah, I really like the game, and I'm excited to talk about the spoilers. You know, in a moment. I think the game's writing is best when it is going full tilt, love, philosophical debate sort of stuff. And there are a few conversations later in the game that I think work really well. I think it's an interesting game to release right now because I think it is a game about the dangers of like constitutional originalism and about people who take laws too literally, and aren't able to understand that things need to evolve or budge or allow for contradiction at times. That's great. I'm less into it on like a character level at times where it feels too simplistic, and it kind of needs to be. But like the story you were talking about the man who is being harassed with graffiti, the ending of that one is not great. It's not terrible. It's just very simple, and I get why it needs to be, But there are a lot of solutions here where you're talking to somebody and you're like, hey, have you thought about blank? And they're like, well, that changed my entire worldview. And you're like, oh, cool. Great. That's convenient because I need it to keep progressing the story. This sounds like I'm knocking it more than I am. The game's really enjoyable. This is, I think, just a challenge with these sorts of video games that have to be concise in a way that, I don't know, breaks the kind of reality for me.
Well, and maintains pacing for the experience. You don't want to be like slogging through something that takes way too long.
Cool. Want to do some questions from our friends at home?
This one's from Joseph. Salve, friend. I really enjoyed this game, particularly that it takes place on a relatively small map, only includes a handful of characters, and doesn't take long. Like Obradin, Myst, what are your favorite inductive mystery games that feel similar to the Forgotten City?
I mean, there's not that many of them, I feel like.
It's kind of a new-ish. I wouldn't count Myst in this. I think Myst is like a very different experience that involves like
its
random switches and like puzzles like that. This is not that. This is much closer to the Obradin, which was mentioned, and Griffin mentioned Outer Wilds, which it also is.
Paradise Killer is kind of like this. If you like Paradise Killer, you would probably dig this. You know, there's the Sherlock Holmes games, but that's a little more certainly like mechanical than this is. You know, I tell you another weird connection here, maybe, is like Night in the Woods is not unlike this in the sense that like about like, you know, solving a mystery and having a lot of like in-depth conversations with people and maybe less like philosophically focused, a little more humanist, I think, than this is. But I think that's a very cool one.
Great.
Y'all, have you been playing anything else?
I did a bit of travel. I haven't been playing a lot, but Kairosoft got a new what's it called? Dungeon Village 2, I believe. It's a new Kairosoft game.
Is that a new phone battery melter?
It's a new battery melter from Kairosoft. I like that game. You're like the mayor of a village, and you got to build sort of things in the village to attract new adventurers who get equipped with new stuff and then go out in the world and battle monsters, and you get money to improve your village more. And yeah, it's a Kairosoft game. It weirdly takes forever to load. Like when you start the game, there's like a full like
not a lot of optimization from those cats.
It's so weird. It's like 45 seconds of waiting for the game to load every time you turn it on. So I don't know what that's all about, but once you get in there, it's great. But yeah, that's about it.
Justin, how about you?
Well, I got back into playing the expansion for Monster Train a little bit. And that one is still such a joy to hop back in. If you haven't dipped your snout into that.
It's out on Switch now.
Out on Switch now. Highly recommend. Really, really good. Just play that one.
Y'all, I need you to play this game before next week's episode. Because next week, we're talking about WarioWare. Spoilers. I know we're going to say that in a second. Spookware is a WarioWare RPG, and you are Skellingtons.
What's it on?
It's on PC. And so far, I'm only like an hour in. I am loving this game. The aesthetic is, you know, like in the Nintendo 64 games, like Cruisin' USA, where they tried to make things look like real world, but it was just a like JPEG floating 2D in 3D space.
Yes.
It looks like that. Like the whole world looks like that. And it's just awesome. It's super charming. I know that we'll talk about it quite a bit more, so I'll leave it at that. But
where do you play it?
What?
What's it on?
PC. Yeah.
Okay.
I got one of them.
Yeah. Give it some time before next week. And that's everything for me.
Yeah, I played Death of the Outsider. I mentioned Dishonored, Death of the Outsider. I mentioned it earlier in the show, but extremely good if you love Dishonored standalone story. Let me just thank the people that have written reviews, or this is just a small handful of them. Thank you to everyone who's written reviews, but small handful. Sam versus Sam, Ryan M. Siak, Leela Mollison, Hyacinth Alex, and Plato Approved, which seems relevant to the game we're talking about this week. Mm-hmm. Thank you for writing reviews. Really appreciate it.
We're going to list all the games we talked about on Twitter this week, but since the A section was basically very short recaps of these games, I will spare everybody the full list. But for segment B, we talked about The Forgotten City, and again, just to hammer home what else we're playing, Dishonored: Death of the Outsider from Fresh, Monster Train expansion from Justin. I'm playing Spookware on PC, and Griffin is playing Dungeon Village 2. We did it.
The Last Divinity is the name of that DLC.
Nice. So that is that. Before we go away, here is where the spoilers start. We're going to talk about the ending of Forgotten City. Next week, we're going to do some WarioWare. Now, we're going to do some spoilers.
Hey, even if you think you won't care, just go ahead and don't. Like, just, it's a really good one. You should play it. Don't think you're, like, just don't.
And then come and listen to this after you played it, or if you've already finished it. Hey, welcome to the podcast.
Even Griffin is going to leave.
Yeah, I'm going to bail. Yeah, bye, y'all.
Go play this game.
I will.
Go play this game right now. Bye.
Okay, spoilers starting now.
I thought it was kind of dumb.
Okay. Let's boil down. Let me describe like the first ending that I saw. One of the very first, as people know, because you're listening to the sport.
Let's keep this pretty focused because presumably everyone's done this already.
So one of the first things you, the crimes or whatever mysteries you are trying to solve is this missing girl who's the daughter of the lead of the city. And I kind of ended up stumbling on her by accident a little bit, which was kind of funny to me. But as an ending, I thought it was okay. Like, it was interesting that I found her in the sewers and it was okay. That
I just had a key to the upper cistern and I just found
her. Yeah, that's the other way to do it. So as an ending, as a way to entice me to play more, I knew that there was a lot more to see. So that was a good way to be here's one option, but there's clearly a much deeper option. I felt the build up to get to the quote true ending, the canon ending, was a little silly just structurally, because you literally have to collect 4 panels, which is very against the spirit of the rest of the game. But I
liked it just because it lent some structure to it. I enjoyed that because once you hit that point, you knew that that was the end. And I liked that it didn't make you guess, what do I need to do to get to that? It's guiding you along the way. If you think of it that way as a way to, guide you through these last few things they want you to do, I think
Did you all have the vote done before you completed your first ending?
No. The vote was one of the last things I did. It's actually one of the hardest quests that you can do is to get Galerius elected. It was almost the last thing that I did.
Yeah, that was the last thing I did.
And I know that Plant, your most of your bugs happened when you were trying to complete that quest.
Oh,
and
it was
extremely
brutal.
Frustrating, and I'm sensitive to that stuff. I actually, it's a shame because that quest in particular has a lot of interesting turns to it, where you're trying to get everyone on your side to vote the way you want, and everyone has different priorities, and it's very satisfying when you finally get them to vote the way you want. It just does seem goofy that the upshot of all that work is we finally free this guy and we can walk into his cage and pick up this dumb little item that I needed.
I got a massive kick out of the fact that he does a crime after that. I thought that was
Plant,
pretty funny.
I know you feel different.
Yeah, I'm a bit sour on that just because I feel like, I don't know. Something about we don't know what is up with him, but he has been shunned by the city because of his mental health in some way. And then it's for a goof, it's and they were right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I didn't really think critically about it very well.
No, I mean it's not. I think it didn't.
You're not wrong. No, you're absolutely on the money. I thought mechanically it. I wasn't thinking about the morality of it, but I thought mechanically it was pretty clever, but I get what you're saying.
I mean, I don't know. I think they were trying to make an interesting point about it's still wrong even though it ends up badly. It's still morally wrong to lock someone up when they haven't done anything. But it is, it does feel like it's played as a little bit of a goof when he, again, the second he comes out, commits a crime.
So the true end game is the Assassin's Creed end game.
Okay, which I disagree with that.
Did you guys have a moment where you were like, "How could you? Holy fuck! Did they actually talk? Like, is this secretly?"
I had a
very fleeting moment when I saw that dude where I was like, "Holy fucking shit! Is this a backdoor Assassin's Creed? Like part of like a canonical Assassin's Creed game?"
You guys keep saying Assassin's Creed. Okay, so the reason. Tell me if I'm wrong. The reason you're saying Assassin's Creed is because instead of being gods, they are a society. It's basically like Thor rules, which is like they're from another planet and they have such amazing technology that they might as well be gods.
It's also ancient space aesthetic. Like it's like that, like space Egypt and space
Greece.
Does
that happen in Assassin's Creed games? There's a space Greece?
Fresh. This is, yes. Did you? You have not finished the Assassin's Creed games.
No,
for
I played like an
years.
Hour of each one.
Oh no, this
okay,
is
okay. So you're not well
this
equipped
is the
to
end
have this conversation.
Of every Assassin's Creed.
Oh, I beat Assassin's Creed 3.
This is like not to hammer this home, but like the end of this game is like Plant just said. This is like the exact way that all Assassin's Creed games in the last 5 years
really?
Have ended. Like it's like
yes.
You get to a level where it's like. Ancient space aesthetic, like, and that is exactly what is happening.
Okay,
here.
Well, but I would say the actual thing. Let's ignore that for a second. That makes sense. I buy that. I would say that the actual thing that you're doing there, I kind of dug. I don't know about you guys, but like having a like a way to solve this problem with a philosophical conversation, whether it's simplistic or not, because it kind of has to be. But like, I don't know. I like listened. I like asked all the questions I wanted to ask, and like tried to form an argument of why Hades or Pluto, I should say, should end this stupid test for this town. Like,
yeah, I'm gonna throw a game I love under the bus. 13 Sentinels does this exact same thing, which is you do.
It also takes 40 hours to get there, but yeah.
Anyway, you do all this work, and then the you meet a character who's like. Here's an info dump that is the entire backstory. Like, it's just, I'm literally just going to tell you the story of the game. And then after that, you have this philosophical debate, which, again, I like it conceptually. I do agree with you. I think it's very cool that you can, like, solve the game by having a conversation. What's silly is our dude has been sitting in space for 3,000 years, and you're like, hey, got 3 or 4 questions. Last question, have you thought about not being an asshole? And he's like, whoa.
I mean,
like, I hadn't thought about it like that.
It's not that simplistic. It's not like Bethesda levels of like, oh, I have enough, talking points.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is,
I guess,
changing a
I guess
space
I,
god's mind after like 5 questions.
But that's how mythology is. Like, it always ends with like, a man talking to a god and the man convincing.
Did you guys not just kill the lady?
So what? That's the like gamey option.
That's what I did. I just shot the lady with my bow.
Yeah, you could do that.
And then I took her crown and then I did I just did it completely different for you guys. I shot the lady with my bow and then I took her crown and then I restarted the time loop. And then I came back and I was like, this is all very good points you're raising, but got her crown. And he's like, what the fuck? I'm like, yeah, that's my deal. And he's like, I quit, I guess. Like, all right, nice, good.
Yeah, that is the goofier option of the way to end the game, in my opinion. But they both give you the best ending, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, they both work. They both land.
The one thing that I do love, though, the epilogue is, I think, a brilliant idea.
Love the epilogue.
I like it on a surface level. It made me feel good to see. I thought it was kind of like, cute and clever. It did
describe
feel
what it is
a
really
little
quick.
Bit well presumably everyone's done it, but you go into a art gallery after you've been like drug out of this reality by Charon that you are put into. Basically, like, it's been a year everyone who is trapped in here has been freed and they are now at like basically a party for you. Where they're displaying all the artifacts that were uncovered from this place. And you see how all these people are like adjusting to our current.
Yeah, they've been shipped to modern
I like
times.
It. Yeah, in the modern era. And I dig it. I feel like it's a little bit like mega it happy ending. You know, for a game that was very much sort of concerning itself with like questions of morality and like philosophical questions, I felt like it was a little bit like, and it all worked out in the end, you know, like, but I enjoyed it. Yeah. I'm not a monster. Like I dug it, especially after the couple years I've had, like, I actually was kind of relieved to be like, no, it's just good. It's just good and happy for everybody.
Yeah. What I really liked about it is so much of the game is about, in the pursuit of like moral good, you can't get to like perfection. That is impossible. That, you know, that was the test that was given to Pluto, and it's impossible. But the world is near infinitely better now than it was in the age of Rome, right? That, like, the arc of history does get better, you know, over the long term. And I like that we get to see that with these people who, some of them were not great people in the Forgotten City. But it was because of the limitations of its world in some ways, and being able to see them in the modern world with all the advantages that provides, I did buy that they would probably be better people. And I liked that. It still is like you said, quite saccharine, but yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I also like how like you have these, like, they have scripted some pretty like meaningful dialogue with all the characters, but because of the nature of the game, there's some characters that are like, I maybe talked to one time, and they're like, well, we've had a long road together. It's like, have we? Do you feel that? That's really weird that you feel that way, because I absolutely do not have much of a connection to you at all.
Kind of a one-way street relationship.
Yeah, right.
I did get the chills at the end, though, when they're like, what happened to all the other gold statues? And they pan down and the whole crowd is there.
That got me. Oh, that got me so good. I gotta say, that got me. I needed that.
I do want to give props to this game specifically for, it might be the only game I can think of that can go from zero to credits in the shortest amount of time. You can get to a credits roll in this game in like 4 minutes, which is pretty spectacular.
Well, you just bury an arrow in the, like, you shoot the lead.
Yeah, the you gun. Shoot the lead. You pick the gun class and you start with the gun with 10 bullets. You only need one, and you just shoot the guy in the face and it ends the time loop. And you go to credits. Just kind of props for them. But I don't know. I as I mentioned earlier, like, I went back and I was like, okay, knowing everything I know, how much could I physically do in the first day to get me so close to the actual ending that I could just finish it very quickly? And you could do a ton. You know where all the, like, plaques are. You know, like, where all the little secret corners are. You know where the chests are that have a shitload of money in them. I was, like, pretty amazed at how much I was able to do. And I don't know. I think that makes it a little bit cooler because so much is hidden in plain sight, basically.
Yeah. It's cool. We've already done all our rap stuff, so we don't have to do anything except say thanks for listening to this a little bit. That's going to do it for us this week on The Besties. Until then, for all of us here at The Besties, be sure to join us again next time for The Besties. Because should the world's best friends make the world's best games?
Besties!